HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
From Los Angeles, Big Ellie, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. I'm Caregiver Dave at CaregiverDave.com, coming to you live globally on HealthyLife.net Radio, positive talk radio. And today we have a special guest for you, Stanley Wanglund. And Stanley is an amazing guy. I met doing another interview on him. But I'm going to have him interview himself. I'm going to have him introduce himself. I can't have him interview himself. But he has his own radio show about mind, body, and spirit. And Stanley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave.
I'm sorry. You like Stan. Let me do that over again. Stan, welcome to the show.
I thought you said Dan, but I just kind of glossed right over. Thank you, Dave. Thanks for inviting me to the show. And I've been watching your stuff, and I'm so delighted to be here because all the positive things that you do, and having experienced this stuff with caregiving myself in not a positive way. I wish I would have met you a lot sooner.
I wish I would have met me a lot sooner. So we have something in common, caregiving. And now it's like being in the brotherhood of Vietnam or something. You know, we've been through the battle together.
It sure is, and I fell in love with you the first time I saw your thing about being selfish, and I really did. And to let your audience know, I got off the dime on that question there, but I am a retired psychologist from the state of New York, and I'm also an active adjunct professor in psychology at SUNY Brigham. As a matter of fact, I just got done doing all my papers a little bit early for the semester, so my head is cream cheese today, so I need something positive.
In other words, you are a very smart person. That would be VSP.
I don't know about that, but I have a over 40 years of experience and, a lot in programs where parents and other people in particular have been caregivers. And what an experience that's been, and then to live through it myself.
Yeah.
So it's no joking matter, and then it is a joking matter.
Well, you have to laugh or else you cry, you know, and I always like to tell non-caregivers that they say, well, I'm not a caregiver, I don't need to listen to you. I says, just wait. You're either going to become one or you're going to need one. There's no escaping it. Caregiving will touch your life in one way or another. So now is the time to prepare for and to learn how to be a caregiver. And a good thing that they could do is read my book.
Absolutely. And no kidding around. I certainly wish I'm a professional. I'm in the field, with other social workers and psychologists and psychiatrists and particularly nurses. And can I tell you something which you already know?
What's that?
We're the worst people that suffer and get sick from being caregivers because we get into the helping fields many times because we love being caregivers.
Yeah,
and we flip from caregiving into, something I hope I can talk a little bit about today, of getting codependent with people in a very, very serious way with our family members, and we slip into that, and man, oh, man, it's like, do police officers, when they retire, put, guns to their head or become drinkers? Well,
yeah.
Wow. I see so many of my friends, they are just, dying the death of a thousand cuts, and they have PhDs and master's degrees in social work and nursing,
yep.
And they have no idea what hit them.
Hey, if Anthony Bourdain can take his life, and I wished I was that guy. I mean, he's got hair, he gets to travel all over the world, he can eat all these exotic foods, and he wasn't happy. He didn't think life was worth living, and he was almost done with life. I mean, he could have just waited, but we just never know, do we?
You know that because you look like Sean Connery. I saw your hat in Atlanta.
Yeah, it was so cold. I sell these hats at my gas station, and they look like Russian hats, and so it just happened to match the color of my beard, so I put it on, and everyone says, oh, that looks so good, and then everyone started saying I look like Sean Connery in Hunt for Red October. So I just posted the picture, and wouldn't you know, someone thought it was me. And they says, why are you scowling? And I says, oh, come on, really? Anyway, What you said about, you had said something that triggered a memory of mine about how you go to the hospital and all the nurses who are supposed to know better about their health are all smoking cigarettes and stuff like that. And so you said something else. I write this down, otherwise I won't remember. when I was in Hawaii and I spoke at the University of Hawaii, the director of aging came up to me and says, "Oh my gosh, that's the best talk I've ever heard about caregiving before, and I've heard a lot of them." And I says, "Really?" I'm like in unbelief. And she says, "No, because everyone we hear are academic people, you know, they've never really done it, but you are a real living talking caregiver who's alive." And so I thought about it and I said, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you, I want you to introduce yourself if you have like a minute or two, which I know you do because it's my show. Tell us if what's the question I like to ask people? You see, everything just slips my mind ever since I turned 55. So I know if you were going to if this was your last year on Earth, what would you spend your time doing before you went into the next life? But before you answer that, I want you to answer something else. I want you to say, who the heck is Stan Wanglin, and why was he placed on this earth?
Wow. This is better than intensive psychotherapy. I really love it.
Well, you know, we got the microphones turned on you, Stan. Now you're on the other side. Welcome to my world.
I love it. I'm a very, you know, as a matter of fact, as you know, the name of my podcast is Mind, Body, and Spirit. Because for the 40 years that I dealt as a psychologist, and program administrator and chief of service and all that kind of stuff like that, very correctly so, I'm not allowed to get into a spiritual component with people. That's not my job or my function in the organizations that I work for. So to answer your question, why I'm put on the earth, I know that you're a spiritual person.
I am.
And so am I. I think I'm here to, I really believe, as I told you on the other show that we were on, I believe I can change the world.
Good for you.
And I can change the world for spiritual reasons and scientific reasons and humanitarian reasons, one person at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're on a show like this that may be reaching a million people, or I'm on a smaller show that has 15,000 people, it's one person at a time is, I think, why I'm here, and to make things better. It's as simple as that.
Yeah,
I was doing a show on addiction, a three-part series the other day, and I told the host who was an addict, and he had very, very upset feelings about being an addict and the terrible things that he did.
Wow.
And the thing that I told him, I think it has to do with me or you or anybody else. I said, would you like to invest $100 in the stock market and get $100 back, 100% return? Your money, sure. I said, that would be great, wouldn't it? You'd be a billionaire. I said, well, think of that when you change your life, where you make something better, or you help somebody out, or look at what you do with Caregiver Dave, or if I put my little podcast out there, and I just put a thing out on codependency just the other day. If it helps a few people, you're getting these huge returns.
Yep.
And I think that's, people like me, there's doers, there's onlookers, and, there's people who don't do anything. And I'm a doer.
Yeah.
That's why I'm put here, to do things. They don't have to be great, but they all add up, like drops in a bucket.
Well, you talk about caregivers, codependents. Caregivers are probably the biggest codependents there are, because they're people pleasers generally, and they hate confrontation. And that's why they are so easily manipulated by their loved one, and why they kind of crash and burn, and they just don't know how to draw those boundaries. So why don't you talk for a few moments about caregivers and codependency, since you know something about both of them.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I was laughing with my wife yesterday as I put out my podcast on codependency for this time of the year, which are the high holy days of codependency and psychopathology, the holiday time. I said, it dawned on me as I was doing the podcast. I said, I think I'm the codependent podcaster because I'm actually trying to help. I'm trying to influence people in an unasked for way. I'm just being facetious there, of course. But you know, people who are in the caregiving field professionally, it's very, very easy to slip into codependency, and people rely. I don't even know if you're manipulated, to be very honest with you. I don't know how you feel about that, but with your question, what are important things? Caretakers, they want to. Particularly if you're a nurse or a doctor or a dentist or your helping profession, I mean, you could be anything, where you're somebody, a coach, you start becoming feeling responsible for other people's feelings. You start becoming responsible for other people's actions, for their choices, for their well-being. And you forget, which is the first thing in codependency, and I think you would agree with me, Dave, you forget where you end and the other person begins.
Yep. And it reminds me of a line in The Princess Bride where he tried to get the fox to come closer and closer, and finally the fox came closer, and then it was time to leave toward the end of the movie, and he says, "I'm sad because now I feel responsible for you." And the fox says, "Well, that's what happens when you open your heart to love," or something like that.
Right. Right. And it's a funny thing. I would tell that to people, and I could see that in myself, that you're great. It's like a Midas touch. Your greatest strength, it's one of those odd things in life. If you're not very mindful, which is, something we should talk about, being self-aware, but to go to your original question, your very strength, the thing that draws people to you, your kindness, your intelligence, or your ability to solve problems, becomes your undoing. Like, King Midas, everything turns to gold, even the food, even your son. You can't, all these good qualities that you have, you take them overboard.
Yep, and that in personal relationships, too, usually the thing that brings a boyfriend, girlfriend together, the thing that they most love about each other, generally becomes, many years later, the thing that causes their divorce. He's just so generous, and then when they're getting a divorce, he gives everything away,
Right. Now, were you speaking to my ex-wife before the show, or what? No, I was married for 20 years before. I've been remarried going on 25 years, and you're exactly right, and that's something
really?
I've already done. Yeah, I came to that conclusion many years ago. That's why I'm very happily remarried. And somebody said to me, you're not going out with these other women that are very beautiful and dynamic and everything else. And I said, my ex-wife was a bipolar person that I had no idea that she really was a bipolar. And, gee, that's a surprise as a codependent psychologist.
Beauty's only skin deep.
Like that. But you get the point. And I would say, no, I'm not going out with these people because I don't want to be the guy who's married for the fifth time to an alcoholic.
Yeah. There was a song in the 50s, if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, find an ugly girl to marry you.
Yeah, well, whatever. We may get kicked off the airways for saying that. But
yes, everything is politically incorrect now.
That's pretty silly. So yeah, codependents, they're good fixers, and they get a real high out of I'm talking about my end of the codependency. They get a real high out of a big endorphin rush and everything else out of doing good things, and people love you and they're grateful for you and everything else. Then when that gets overboard, or you're a son or a daughter or this is your spouse, think of all the things that we're taught. You got to take, we don't leave any bodies behind when we're in the military. The building's burning down and, I know you're a fireman, but there's grandma's parrot is up there. Go get it. So people have all these kinds of crazy things. Mm-hmm. That are very beautiful, but they're very unrealistic. And you start buying into these fantasies. And when you buy into these fantasies and become codependent, these are my opinions, and I think a lot of it is born out in the field.
Boundaries can help that codependency, can it? I mean, when people offend you or they cross the line, say something that really upsets you, it's really your fault because you didn't let them know what was okay and what was not okay. You didn't make that boundary, that line in the sand, so to speak. Talk about that.
You're very right. And, one of my favorite authors is Melody Beattie, who I'm sure that you're familiar with, who wrote Codependent No More. And she is firm in boundaries. As a matter of fact, I was talking with an acquaintance the other night, giving them some professional guidance on the child of theirs who's a grown child but is also an addictive personality. And she's as strict as a heart attack with that and saying, hey, look, I'm not going to support any criminal behavior. This is not a rehab center, whether you're my husband or wife or whatever it is. You know, boom, 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 boom. Your problems are your own. You know, if you were, you know, if you were drinking and driving, if you refuse to go to the doctor and, you know, you have to go in an ambulance to the hospital because you're having some kind of a diabetic attack, don't be calling me up in the middle of the night. Call the ambulance and, you know, if I can get to you, I can get to you. Now, that sounds harsh, but when you're dealing with people who take advantage of you and you're, when you have this flawed thinking, you have to really take firm steps. Just like, you know, you wouldn't remember, but we were on the show together. I said that I had a stent put in my heart, you know, put in my body 3 years ago. And that was as a result of being a codependent and caretaking for my elderly parents. And the chronic high cholesterol, high blood pressure, heart condition, absolutely. God, my doctors wouldn't believe it because I'm an excellent physical health. But what can the effects be? The effects be, you know, can be that you internalize these things, you don't set boundaries, and you probably, I know, I can't say you probably know, I know you know, and it's so important for your audience. Anybody can slip into it. You repress, you bury these common sense ideas about what you should be doing because you're fearful or guilty, you know, these are your parents, this is your wife, this is your husband, and then you become obsessed with the other person.
Yeah, well, give us a hypothetical, because we're talking to burned-out caregivers mostly, and how, give us a hypothetical on how to set boundaries, because it's easier said than done, and
I'll give you a very real one.
All right.
So that your burnt-out caregivers can know that I'm telling the truth. My house, I had a beautiful home. My house was flooded, for the second time in 5 years. And then my father developed dementia. I was moving him into my home, but I had bought him a home a few blocks away. I wound up moving with my wife and I into their home to take care of him. And I was, this is while I'm working and teaching and everything else, and I'm becoming physically sick from doing this. I get no help from anybody in my family. Sound familiar, caregivers?
Absolutely. Just take money if you can't get any help.
No, and my mother won't allow anybody else in the home. You know, these are elderly German and Swedish people, so they don't, you know, gravy is the beverage in the house, and we don't accept help from anyone's family will do it. So here I am, because I'm the boss, I can come home and I can help change my father and do all these crazy things. So to make a long story short, my mother became completely impossible. She became the mother from hell that never was. Because she was in her, you know, her late 80s and 90s and was madder than hell at my father because they had this codependent relationship. And now I had this crazy fantasy to allow, which was wonderful, you know, for my dad. My father never spent one day in the hospital his entire life, and he passed away in his bed peacefully and everything else. And I was very proud of that, while it almost killed me. Now, I told my mother, forgive this long story becoming a little bit longer, I said, you know, if it would have been anybody else with you as dad, I said I would have seriously thought about calling Adult Protective Services because when the doctor said don't force them to eat or don't do this or that, you were deliberate and you knew better and you had the potential to make him suffer. And I can't understand why you're doing that. Well, my mother would fake things and manipulate things, and I was her favorite child. And my mother was delightful. The only person she could beat up of her brothers, of my brothers and sisters, was me. I was the only person who, to sound familiar?
Yeah.
Anybody? I was the professional punching bag because I was trained to do that, and I understood it, and it didn't bother me.
Yeah.
Now it bothered me.
Well, I always say when you create boundaries for someone, you know, you've got to tell them, all right, here's the boundary. And if they break the boundary, which they will, because they're like most six-year-olds, they like to test the boundaries. You say, hey, remember we talked about this, and if this happens, then this will happen. And you can either give them another chance if you want to be really nice, Or you can tell them, you know, if that happens again, I'm going to have to deal with it. And if it does happen again, then you have to implement the consequences. So,
yes, natural consequences. Yeah. And if I can tell you the end of the story, it's
all right. Well, you got 30 seconds, so go ahead.
30 seconds. The end of the story was she would feign illnesses. And I said to her, I said, if you do this again, I have to send you in an ambulance to the hospital or some other place.
There you go.
I said, I really don't think you're going to come home.
Mm.
And she did. And played an act at the hospital for 6 or 7 days. The doctor thought she was going to pass away, and she wasn't. She wanted, I had to place her in a nursing home.
Yeah, that's an excellent thing to do. And I tell people, you know, just you have all the aces. Just say, hey, if we can't make this work, you're going to a nursing home. That's it. Because I'm not going to sacrifice my life for yours as much as I love you. You wouldn't want me to do that. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. So don't go away. We'll be right back with the Caregiver Dave Show.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net. Millions of listeners know the secret. Now you do too. Positive talk 24 hours a day, every day.
And we're back with Caregiver Dave on the Caregiver Dave Show, CaregiverDave.com, and my special guest, Stan Wanglund, and Engineer Jay. Can't forget him. He's the guy who makes it all happen. So let's talk about critical thinker, being a critical thinker. Do caregivers need to be a critical thinker? What the heck does that even mean?
Boy, you know, that's an easy one to make, you know, very quick, Dave. A critical thinker is somebody who really, when they have an opinion on something or they make a statement, if it's an important thing or even if it's not an important thing, it's to kind of do what our president doesn't do, and then I won't have any more politics. That you use empirical information, use good information. You wouldn't want to make a purchase of a house without knowing the interest rates. You wouldn't want to take medication without knowing your blood pressure or something like that. And when you're a critical thinker, when somebody says, I want you to do this, or I think your mother should be at home with you, or I think this is, your wife can do this, it's a very simple thing you have to say. What would make you say that? Where's the evidence? And that's what you need. That's what you need to be a critical thinker. What's the evidence? Because everybody can have an opinion about anything. What are the facts? What are the resources? Where are you getting them from? Are you getting them from the National Enquirer, Google, or are you getting them from the National Institute of Health?
So in other words, instead of when someone is trying to make you feel guilty or judge you for something, you should not take it personally, number one, and mm-hmm. be a critical thinker when you respond to them. Don't be intimidated by them. Don't let them intimidate you. And just stand your ground.
There you go. You stand on the facts and, you know, and say, this is as far as I can go.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Being aware with yourself, being a critical thinker. You know, if you can't do something, if you can't be a caretaker, if you can't take it anymore, you can't take it. That's being a critical thinker.
Yeah, and giving them that option. Hey, it's either me or nursing home. You choose, because I need to stay alive, because I don't want my children to suffer or to sacrifice their lives for me, as I know you would not want that to happen to you with me. Let's talk about the spiritual side of caregiving. Some people obviously think of themselves as spiritual. Some think of themselves as religious. Some just think of themselves as nothing. What is the difference between all that, and what do we need, and why do we need it?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. If you're going to be a critical thinker, and I have a wonderful book I was just rereading today. It's by Robert Sapolsky. He's a world-famous biologist and wonderful author. It's called Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers. And it's all about stress. And he was raised as a religious person and as a really big scientist. He's an atheist, but one of the things that he's into is into critical thinking. And what the research shows, what the science shows, whether there is a God or there isn't, or whatever your spiritual beliefs are, whatever, mind, body, and spirit, this idea of spirit is connected with people, and it's very, very powerful. And people who have a spiritual side, who meditate, who are mindful, who seem to be connected with a sense of wonder with the universe or a deity, with God or some such thing like that, they seem to derive a great deal of comfort. I guess it's very similar, if you don't believe in religion, to the effect of placebo. You know, if you think it's going to be a good day, hey, if you think that sugar pill is going to work for you, it really does, more often than not. And when you do believe in it, I'm a spiritual person. I'm also a religious person. You know what? I do believe in those things. They're very powerful for me, and they enhance my life. The science backs that up. And if you go to Cancer Treatment Centers of America or the Mayo Clinic, or if you go to Sloan Kettering, they're all going to have spiritual advisors.
Yep.
Because they're powerful. And it's very funny. I volunteer each week to work at two hospitals locally. I don't volunteer as a psychologist.
Hmm.
I volunteer in the chaplaincy program for pastoral work. And I don't go and evangelize to anybody else. And the benefits of spirituality with the people that you see who believe in spiritual things, in talking to people who are facing death or whatever, incredibly better.
Yeah, well, anybody who denies the spiritual aspect of mankind is just fooling themselves. And I know that's not politically correct to say, but, you know, as a people, we're losing our ability to debate and to get along with different ideas. I mean, business, colleges back in the old days used to say, you know, surround yourself with people who think differently than you. Don't put all of the same yes people around you, or you will be eaten up by the competition. And yet the opposite seems to be going on in our universities today. They want everybody to think alike. Anybody who comes on campus with a opposite opinion, you know, seem to be stormed off campus, and a riot ensues. I just don't get it.
You're exactly right. As a matter of fact, the recently popular psychologist Jordan Peterson talks about that greatly, about people being, overly sensitive. As a matter of fact, I ran children's clinics for many years, and one of the things that you wanted children to be, and particularly, I totally agree with what you're saying, as they grew older, is you wanted them to develop what we call a hardy personality, H-A-R-D-Y. It was actually named after a guy called Thomas Hardy.
A resiliency,
where you could be strong, and not everybody should get a medal if they're playing a game and they lose. It's okay to lose. You know, I think you're talking about all those things, or have all the different points of view. They shouldn't, blow you out of the water.
Yeah.
I don't debate with people about religious things, and I respect their opinion, and I say, hey, look, I'm just not going to get into it with you. It's like Jerry Lewis talking about the telethon years ago when he'd say, if you don't get it, you don't get it.
Mm.
You know, people would criticize him about that. And I can respect that, but I'm of the old school. I've never seen any atheist in a foxhole.
That's true.
You know?
So how do caregivers appropriate these coping skills to stay alive? Because, 30% of them die before their loved ones do, and a larger number get sicker, and they need a caregiver of their own, and many of them are feeling suicidal tendencies, just like Anthony Bourdain and Robin Williams and all those people just before they took their lives.
Yep, it's a really good question, Dave, and the statistics I have is higher than 30%. I just saw one today. It said 63% of caregivers 65 and older will die before the person that they're caregiving for.
Mm.
I think we've touched on some of it in terms of not being a codependent. The other thing is the spiritual side, the critical thinking side. There's a brilliant philosopher I was speaking to a few years ago, Lou Mironoff. He's from New York, and he has a book called Aristotle for Everyone.
Mm.
Excuse me, that wasn't his book. It was Plato, not Prozac. and the point being is people need to be mindful. We talk about being, meditating on things. That's to, lower your blood pressure to calm down and everything.
Yeah.
But mindfulness is something different. It's like it ties into gratitude.
Mm.
It ties into being self-aware of things. And I think I told you on the other show, my oldest daughter passed away a few years ago. And, it's one of the things when you talk about being depressed or suicidal.
Yeah.
I was never that way over that because of all these other things which didn't destroy me and made me stronger and things in life that prepared me for things.
Mm-hmm.
And of all the psychology books and philosophy and everything else, the thing that was most helpful to me was the book of Ecclesiastes.
Well, I want to talk about that. Hold that thought. Let's take another break, and we'll start when we come back, okay? So don't go away with Stan Wangland and Caregiver Dave.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
And we're back with Caregiver Dave and the Caregiver Dave Show at CaregiverDave.com. And our guest today is Stan Wangland, he prefers. So, Stan, you were about to tell us about the book of Ecclesiastes, which is one of my favorite books in the Bible.
David, and not to be morbid, that was a particularly important book for me, as well as the idea of Stoicism when my daughter passed away. And the book of Ecclesiastes is basically telling you that, you know, there's a time for things. There's a time to be happy in life. There's a time to be sad in life. There's a time to live. There's a time to die. You know, all is vanity, as King Solomon, I guess, was the one or the sage in there is talking about. And it just means that that's life. The Greeks had the same thing with Stoicism. They said that, you know, there's the world the way that it is and the world the way you want it to be. When the two of them are the same, you're a happy camper. When they're not, lots of people who are not mindful and not self-aware, they become very upset. And then they want permanent solutions to temporary problems. They want to take their life.
Yeah.
They want to end everything. They think they're being treated unfairly, but they're not. It feels that way, and that's normal to feel overwhelmed and hurt and everything else like that. But that's the way that life is.
So let's give another down-to-earth example. Let's say an adult child is caring for a parent with Alzheimer's, and they're just having trouble coping because the parent is treating them like a child, like they were, which is why they moved out of the house, just drives them crazy. And they want to love their parent, they want to be respectful, but they just can't because they're pushing all their buttons. And they don't know how to respond, and so they usually end up yelling, and then they have to feel guilty, then they have to ask forgiveness, and then the whole cycle starts over again. What is some practical advice for them to help in that area?
I think that's the one I just gave, and it's actually Albert Ellis's spin-off on Stoicism, the world the way that it is, versus the way we'd like it to be. When my dad lost his sense of who he was, he would sit and say to me, "Do you have a father? Do you have a father?" And I turned that in through humor and through a deep personal awareness. It was one of the smartest things that I think I ever did, and I want to share this with your audience. I would tell him, I'd look straight in his face and say, "Yeah, I have a father." And he didn't know it was him. And I said, "And he's a wonderful man. He's a great guy. Let me tell you all about him." And you know what I felt? I felt I was having an existential moment. I felt that I was helping myself and my father bring closure to a very beautiful and very normal thing. My father had a nice life. So if your father or mother, they're aggravating you or driving you crazy, hey, that's perfectly normal to get aggravated with them. But the world the way it really is at that moment, that's not your father or mother anymore.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're saying, I'm sorry.
And that's just the way that it is.
It sounds like you're saying the answer to that question is to be more spiritual, meditate, pray.
Absolutely.
And God will give you the wisdom of what to say, what to do, what creative solution to make, and it will become a moving experience for you. That's the great advice, Stan.
Thank you. Let's
talk about anger and forgiveness. That's a biggie, because I always like to say drinking poison is like unforgiveness. You know, you're drinking it and you're hoping the other person's going to die, and it only hurts you. So to talk about that, anger and unforgiveness.
I just did a podcast on that for the holidays because so many people are just devastated by anger and forgiveness. And you know, anger is basically it's not just where people feel that they're wronged. In caretaking, people get angry because of their fantasy of the way things should be hasn't been met. In many times, and they become very nervous and upset about it. It causes a state of disharmony for them, and then they feel that they're a victim, and then they want to have their pound of flesh with somebody else. as a young man, I don't think I was totally forgiving. As an older man, I'm right along with you. If you're into vendetta, if you're into anger and you don't want to forgive, I'll use the term vendetta, then dig two graves. Because one is for the person you're going to kill, and the second one is for you. Because you empower another person, it's almost like another act of codependency, I find. Mm-hmm. When you're angry and unforgiving to somebody, you're holding all these grudges and everything else, you're giving people maybe who shouldn't even have it a sense of importance.
Wow. And, a lot of victim mentality going on out there these days.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're into a lot of tribalism right now, and you know, people, you know, they feel that they're right, and they get angry because they think somebody's wrong. And it's one of the irrational things that a person like Albert Ellis would talk about, and critical thinkers understand, is that there's no one right solution to things. And if somebody makes you angry, so experience your anger and get over it.
All right, so someone's angry. And they need to calm down. What do you suggest they do, like right now? Stop talking, I assume.
If you're angry, number one, is it justifiable anger? Number one. And if it is, go with it. Feel angry for a bit, and then some of the best things to do are things like exercise, distraction, proper sleep, proper diet. Join a support group. The other thing with anger or forgiveness, or even particularly depression and anxiety, which lead into that, go volunteer to do something, with people who are worse off than you.
Oh, that's a good one.
I mean, when people feel terrible, I've often said to people, I said, I don't mean this disrespectfully. I work near hospitals. Go past the oncology unit. You won't feel very sick from your sore back very long when you see somebody coming out with a colostomy bag or losing their hair or have 5 weeks to live or something like that. You know, it puts things into perspective. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't hurt, that you shouldn't acknowledge and be aware of your pain. Being that good critical thinker that you want to become, being that person who loves yourself, or who wants to take care of yourself, you have to tell yourself that this is not good for you.
Yeah, it gives you ulcers, gives you cancer, gives you more stress, and it doesn't, I mean, the goal for a caregiver is to have happiness, joy, peace, you know, all the gifts of the spirit, so to speak, and it's not going to happen with all that negative energy. You know, if somebody rips you off, instead of wanting to sue them and go through 3 years of negative energy, just forgive them. Let God deal with it. You know.
I'm with you on that one. Yeah. Sometimes you can't. In a sense, I don't mean about forgiveness.
Yeah.
But I'm a great person now of not making split second decisions.
Yeah. Good.
And that's one of the things that's a piece of advice from the Mayo Clinic is for caregivers: is to sit quietly and sit still.
Yep.
Turn things over to a higher power. Turn things over to the universe if you're not a
good advice.
A spiritual person.
Good advice. We're going to take another break. Hold that thought, and we'll be right back. And don't go away.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
And we're back with Caregiver Dave on the Caregiver Dave Show and my guest, Stan Wangland. And Stan, you wanted to finish a thought before I cut you off there?
I don't remember what it was.
That's okay. We'll just move on.
I'm having a moment of dementia.
Yeah, join the club. Caregiving, like I said before, is something that is not on our resume, that we're never really prepared for, and I'm trying to change the world by getting people prepared for it. It's the caregiver tsunami that's coming, and everyone is going to either need one or want one. But, you know, this whole thing where you have five siblings, and this one will say, oh, no, I can't do that. Betty, she's the best one for that, you know. And another one say, well, you know, I live far away. And all of a sudden, people are giving their excuses why they would not be a good caregiver. They would be a terrible caregiver. But you would be a great caregiver. Remember when you took care of our cat when she was sick and so on? Is caregiving for everyone? Are there some people that just should not do it?
this is the greatest show. I'm telling you, this is. I can see why your books are so popular, and and I'm not patronizing you. This is just wonderful stuff. I personally think, and it's my personal opinion, yeah, I think there are people who should not be caregivers. I can remember my brother. I asked him to do a simple thing when my dad passed away. I said, "Do you think you could maybe write Dad's obituary?" And he says, "Nah, I don't think I." Now he never spent one moment with my father in 3.5 years taking care of him. And he says, well, "What else can I do?" I said, "I don't know. What else can you do? Just, I mean, complain or avoid things or whatever." There are other people who don't have the temperament for that. You do know that there are lots of people who get into abusive situations caregiving.
Right.
They wind up neglecting people, popping people, whatever, fighting with people. The police get involved or protective services. People don't think that, but that is a reality. Or people are just, they don't have the skills to do that. Oddly enough, the research shows you would think that females are the best providers, and they may be, but females are at higher risk for dying than males.
Yeah, they take it too personally, you know.
And anxiety and a whole bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm.
So, there could be people who have the wrong temperament, just as there are people who are not don't have the temperament to be a parent.
Yeah, well, that doesn't change the fact that those people still have to parent, and those people that you're talking about with caregiving still have to care, give. And, I mean, you and I both know we're in business, kind of, and we know a lot of managers who should not be managers. They have no people skills. Right. The person they're managing is a better manager than they are. And the same with caregiving. But unfortunately, you know, you work with what you got.
Well, here's the good news. Since your show is a positive, let's take the other flip side with the vast majority of people. Let's say you do get caught with your pants down, so to speak, and you're not prepared. Well, just as if you came to me and said you were feeling anxious and depressed, I could sit and do a mental status checklist with you so we could become aware and you could become more self-aware of things. You can do that with yourself, which is a very important thing for caregivers. To be very truthful, to go through a period of self-examination and self-awareness and say, hey, I'm this caregiver now. What do I know about things financially? What do I know about giving somebody a bath? What do I wonder, what do I know about having power of attorney? How are my friends on the bowling league or my golf buddies going to take it when I can't come play golf anymore? How's my sex life going to change? You know, it could be a whole host of things to be aware of. And I'm sure every one of your burnt-out caregivers, as you said out there, or somebody who's having problems, is experiencing those things and more. You know, if you're in a house, where you're in direct contact with somebody, that presents a different set of things as opposed to maybe hiring people to come in and help the person you're caregiving, where you're coordinating things. There may be things where you have to develop some new skill sets. And you have to be aware of the ones that you need to develop. And, that might be very beneficial, not only to the person that you're caregiving for, but for yourself, where, you know, you'll be prepared when, you know, you may need that or will need that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that personal time is so important. You know, I think back of when I needed to get away, and so I would schedule these trips for the weekend to, you know, places that I hadn't been in decades to visit relatives that I haven't seen in, you know, forever, and I would bring in someone to watch my wife, and I would not exactly lie to her about where I was going, because I knew that would start an argument, and because, right, you know, she needed me, and where are you going, why can't I go, and right, you know, she didn't understand that I needed to get away from her, because caregivers need to get away from their job, so to speak. And so, you know, maybe we stretch the truth a little. Is it okay to kind of, I mean, if you seem to be in an impossible situation and you're desperate and you're right near the breaking point, that you do something that maybe you wouldn't normally do. I mean, and I don't want to condone anything like that, but if they do that, how do they deal with the guilt or justify it, so to speak? You know what I mean?
Oh, I don't have any hesitation in agreeing with the premise that you're setting up. That would be the same way as when I've asked doctors before, how much do you level with somebody when they're terminally ill? It's all a question of judgment and responsible behavior. If there's a benefit to it, and the person, of course, deserves to know about their condition, you tell them the whole truth. But if the person is mentally limited or the person is not going to benefit from whatever, there's ways to say that the situation is very grave without saying you're going to die in 2 weeks. And it's no different than, the little white lie that you would tell to get some head time so you could take care of somebody. I wouldn't have a problem with that at all, and that may be rationalization, but I think that's good critical thinking. And it would be like telling a two-year-old, there's no Santa Claus or something like that, just for the sake of, being honest all the time with somebody. That
right.
may not, it just wouldn't be a wise and responsible thing to do. I think you have to use common sense in those situations and common decency.
It's hard to believe that an hour can go so fast, isn't it, Stan? But I do appreciate
you
coming in, and you're a great guest, and I just want to encourage everybody to, what's a good contact number or email to get a hold of you, Stan, if they want to know more about what you do?
Sure. I would, anybody who has any question, they can certainly contact me on my regular email. It's swanglund@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at Stanley Wangland, S. Wangland on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You can catch my podcast. Stanley Wangland, Stan Wangland, actually, talking about mind, body, and spirit. It's on all the major platforms,
right.
I would be delighted to hear from you. And,
great.
I'm also, after the first of the year, I'm going to have a YouTube site, and I'll be doing some other things.
Awesome. And if you want to get a hold of me, everybody, it's caregiverdave.com, and go there and hit the free button that says free gift, and you get a burnout quiz to find out if you're a candidate for burnout, and you get my copy of my free book, my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. So until next time, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you again. Thank you, Stan.
You're more than welcome, Dave. It's a pleasure.